You can't possibly know that. It hasn't been in the paper here.
He shrugged. Educated guess. The cloth over her face means she knew him and he knew her, and he was ashamed to leave her uncovered. Probably made him feel remorseful, maybe like she was watching him from beyond the grave or something. That kind of semi-functional thinking is indicative of a low IQ. The lack of forced entry and the lack of disruption of the house both mean he was familiar with the place. He'd been there many times before. Easy enough to figure.
Why easy?
Because what kind of a guy with a low IQ has been visiting with a smart and pretty girl many times before? Got to be a gardener or a handyman. Probably not a gardener because they work outside and they tend to come at least in pairs. So I figured a handyman, probably tormented by how young and cute she was. One day he can't stand it anymore, he makes some kind of a clumsy advance, she's embarrassed by it, she rejects him, maybe even laughs at it. He freaks out and rapes her and kills her. He's a handyman, got his tools with him, he's accustomed to using them, he'd use a hammer for a thing like that. Lamar was silent, reddening again under the pallor. "And you call that profiling?" Reacher asked. "It's just common sense."
"That was a very simple case," she said quietly.
He laughed. "You guys get paid for this? You study it in college and all?" They entered New Jersey. The blacktop improved and the shoulder plantings got tidier, like they always do. Every state puts a lot of effort into the first mile of its highways to make you feel you're entering a better place from a worse one. Reacher wondered why they didn't put the effort into the last mile instead. That way you'd miss the place you were leaving.
"We need to talk," Lamar said.
"So, talk. Tell me about college."
"We're not going to talk about college."
"Why not? Tell me about profiling 101. You pass?"
"We need to discuss the cases," he smiled.
"You did go to college, right?" She nodded.
"Indiana State."
"Psychology major?" She shook her head. "So, what was it? Criminology?"
"Landscape gardening, if you must know. My professional training is from the FBI Academy at Quantico."
"Landscape gardening? No wonder the Bureau snapped you up in a big hurry."
"It was relevant. It teaches you to see the big picture and to be patient."
"And how to grow things. That could be useful, killing time while your bullshit profiles are getting you nowhere." She was silent again. "So, are there many irrational, phobic landscape gardeners at Quantico? Any bonsai enthusiasts scared of spiders? Orchid growers who won't step on the cracks in the sidewalk?" Her pallor was whitening.
"I hope you're real proud of yourself, Reacher, making jokes while women are dying."
He went quiet and looked out of the window. She was driving fast. The road was wet and there were gray clouds ahead. They were chasing a rainstorm south. "So, tell me about the cases," he said. She gripped the wheel and used the leverage to adjust her position in the seat.
"You know the victim group," she said. "Very specific, right?"
He nodded. "Apparently."
"Locations are obviously random. He's chasing particular victims, and he goes where he has to. Crime scenes have all been the victim's residence so far. Residences have been basically various, single-family housing in all cases, but varying degrees of isolation."
"Nice places, though." She glanced at him. He smiled. "The army paid them all off, right? When they quit? Scandal avoidance, they call it? A big chunk of money like that, a chance to settle down after a few footloose years, they probably bought nice houses." She nodded as she drove.
"Yes, and all in neighborhoods, so far."
"Makes sense," he said. "They want community. What about husbands and families?"
"Callan was separated, no kids. Cook had boyfriends, no kids.
Stanley was a loner, no attachments. You look at Callan's husband?
Obviously. Any homicide, first thing we do is look at family. Any married woman, we look at the husband. But he was alibied, nothing suspicious. And then with Cook, the pattern became clear, so we knew it wasn't a husband or a boyfriend.
No, I guess it wasn't.
First problem is how he gets in. No forced entry, he just walks in the door.
You think there was surveillance first? She shrugged.
Three victims is not a large number, so I'm wary of drawing conclusions, but yes, I think he must have been watching them. He needed them to be alone. He's efficient and organized. I don't think he would have left anything to chance. But don't overestimate the surveillance. It would be pretty obvious pretty quickly that they were alone during the day.
Any evidence of a stakeout? Cigarette butts and soda cans piled up under a nearby tree? She shook her head.
This guy is leaving no evidence of anything.
Neighbors see anything?
Not so far.
And all three were done during the day?
Different times, but all during daylight hours.
None of the women worked?
Like you don't. Very few of you ex-army people seem to work. It's a snippet I'm going to file away.
He nodded and glanced at the weather. The roadway was streaming. The rain was a mile ahead.
Why don't you people work? She asked.
Us people? He repeated. In my case, because I can't find anything I want to do. I thought about landscape gardening, but I wanted a challenge, not something that would take me a second and a half to master. She went silent again, and the car hissed into a wall of rain. She set the wipers going and switched on the headlights and backed off the speed a little.
Are you going to insult me all the time? She asked.
Making a little fun of you is a pretty small insult compared to how you're threatening my girlfriend, and how you're so ready and willing to believe I'm the type of guy could kill two women.
So, was that a yes or a no?
It was a maybe. I guess an apology from you would help turn it into a no.
An apology? Forget about it, Reacher. I stand by my profile. If it wasn't you, it was some scumbag just like you.
The sky was turning black and the rain was intense. Up ahead, brake lights were shining red through the deluge on the windshield. The traffic was slowing to a crawl. Lamar sat forward and braked sharply.
Shit,
she said. Reacher smiled.
Fun, huh? And right now your risk of death or injury is 10,000 times higher than flying conditions like these.
She made no reply. She was watching her mirror, anxious the people behind her should slow down as smartly as she had. Ahead, the brake lights made a red chain as far as the eye could see. Reacher found the electric switch on the side of his seat and racked it back. He stretched out and got comfortable.
I'm going to take a nap, he said. Wake me up when we get someplace.
We're not through talking, Lamar said. We have a deal, remember? Think about Petrosian. I wonder what he's doing right now.
Reacher glanced to his left, looking across her and out her window. Manhattan lay in that direction, but he could barely see the far shoulder of the highway.
Okay, we'll keep on talking, he said.
She was concentrating, riding the brake, crawling forward into the deluge.
Where were we? She said.
He's staked them out sufficient to know they're alone. It's daylight. Somehow he walks right in. And then what?
Then he kills them.
In the house?
We think so.
You think so?
Can't you tell? There's a lot we can't tell, unfortunately.
Well, that's wonderful.
He leaves no evidence, she said. It's a hell of a problem.
He nodded.
So, describe the scenes for me. Start with the plantings in their front yards.
Why, you think that's important?
He laughed.
No, I just thought you'd feel better telling me something you did know a little about.
You son of a bitch.
The car was crawling forward. The wipers beat slowly across the glass, back and forth, back and forth. There were flashing red and blue lights up ahead.
"Accident," he said.
"He leaves no evidence," she said again. "Absolutely nothing. No trace evidence, no fibers, no blood, no saliva, no hair, no prints, no DNA, no nothing."
Reacher locked his arms behind his head and yawned.
"That's pretty hard to do."
Lamar nodded, eyes fixed on the windshield.
"It sure is. We've got lab tests now like you wouldn't believe, and he's beating all of them."
"How would a person do that?"
"We don't really know. How long have you been in this car?"
He shrugged.
"Feels like most of my life."
"It's been about an hour. By now, your prints are all over everything. The door handles, the dash, the seatbelt buckle, the seat switch. There could be a dozen of your hairs on the headrest, a ton of fiber from your pants and your jacket all over the seat. Dirt from your backyard coming off your shoes onto the carpet, maybe old fibers from your rugs at home."
He nodded.
"And I'm just sitting here."
"Exactly. The violence associated with homicide, all that stuff would be spraying all over the place, plus blood maybe, saliva too."
"So maybe he's not killing them in the house."
"He leaves the bodies in there."
"So at least he'd have to drag them back inside." She nodded.
"We know for sure he spends time in the house. There's proof of that."
"Where does he leave the bodies?"
"In the bathroom, in the tub."
The Buick inched past the accident. An old station wagon was crumpled nose first into the back of a sport utility exactly like Reacher's own. The station wagon's windshield had two head-shaped holes broken through it. The front doors had been crowbarred open. An ambulance was waiting to U-turn through the divider. Reacher turned his head and stared at the sport utility. It wasn't his. Not that he thought it could be. Jody wouldn't be driving anywhere. Not if she had any sense.
"In the tub," he repeated.
Lamar nodded at the wheel.
"In the tub."
"All three of them?"
he asked. Lamar nodded again.
"All three of them."
"Like a signature."
"Right,"
she said.
"How does he know they've all got tubs?"
"You live in a house, you've got a tub."
"How does he know they all live in houses? He's not selecting them on the basis of where they live. It's random, right? They could live any place, like I live in motels, and some of them just have showers." She glanced across at him.
"You don't live in motels. You live in a house in Garrison."
He glanced down, like he had forgotten.
"Well, now I do, I guess," he said. "But I was on the road before. How does he know these women weren't?"
"That's a catch-22, she said. "If they were homeless, they wouldn't be on his list. I mean, to be on his list, they need to live somewhere so he can find them."
"But how does he know they all have tubs?" She shrugged.
"You live somewhere, you've got a tub. Takes a pretty small studio to have just a shower stall."
Reacher nodded. This was not his area of expertise. Real estate was pretty much foreign terrain to him.
"Okay, they're in the tub."
"Naked, and their clothes are missing."
She was clear of the crash site and was accelerating into the rain. She put the windshield wipers on high.
"He takes their clothes with him?" he asked. "Why?"
"Probably as a trophy. Taking trophies is a very common phenomenon in most serial crimes like these. Maybe it's symbolic. Maybe he thinks they should still be in uniform, so he robs them of their civilian gear, as well as their lives."
"He'd take anything else?" She shook her head.
"Not as far as we can tell. There was nothing obviously removed. No big spaces anywhere. Cash and cards were all still where they should be."
"So he takes their clothes and leaves nothing behind."
She was quiet for a beat.
He does leave something behind, she said. He leaves paint.
Paint?
Army camouflage green. Gallons of it.
Where?
In the tub. He puts the body in there, naked, and then he fills the tub with paint.
Beecher stared past the beating wipers into the rain.
He drowns them in paint?
She shook her head.
He doesn't drown them. They're already dead. He just covers them with paint afterward.
How? Like he paints them all over?
She was gunning it hard, making up for lost time.
No, he doesn't paint them. He just fills the tub with the paint right up to the rim. Obviously, it covers the bodies.
So they're floating in a tub full of green paint? She nodded.
That's how they were all found.
He fell silent. He turned away and stared through his window and stayed silent for a long time. To the west, the weather was clearer. It was brighter. The car was moving fast. Rain hissed under the tires and beat on the underbody. He stared blankly at the brightness in the west and watched the endless road reel in and realized he was happy. He was heading somewhere. He was on the move. His blood was stirring like an animal at the end of winter. The old hobo demon was talking to him, quietly, whispering in his head, "You're happy now," it was saying. "You're happy, aren't you? You even forgot for a moment you're stuck in garrison, didn't you?"
"You okay?" Lamar asked.
He turned toward her and tried to fill his mind with her face, the white pallor, the thin hair, the sneering teeth.